This podcast was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 47. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Joining me today is James Ian from Los Angeles, California. James is a singer, songwriter, and actor, and he has SMA type 3. So we'll be talking today about James's story and his music and just about what it's like to be an artist with a disability. So I'm really excited for this one. James, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for having me. It's an honor and a real pleasure. So thank you very much for thinking of me to do this.
Oh, man, great to have you. That, like I said, anyone who listens to the show knows I'm big into media representation and artists and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to this one. So awesome.
Cool. Thank you.
Great. Well, before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
Are you interested in learning more about the latest treatment for spinal muscular atrophy? Visit treatsma.com to see how this treatment works, hear about family stories, and learn about the steps to starting treatment. Visit treatsma.com.
All right. Well, James, I know we met at the Cure SMA conference this year, and I got to know you a little bit there, and I've been listening to some of your stuff. So I just wanted to start by talking about your background as an artist first. So when did you start to develop like a love for music, and who were some of the artists that really inspired you?
Yeah, so I developed a love for music at a really, really young age. I think my parents told the story that I was, I think like before the age of two, I was singing like Prince and Michael Jackson songs on the radio. So I loved those artists and just kind of singing along with them. And then, you know, that was always just kind of in the blood for me, and, you know, always kind of like dancing around and singing. And then I ended up taking piano lessons around the age of five because my parents saw that, you know, I was into music. And so they asked, you know, did I kind of want to cultivate that? And I said, sure. And so that's kind of where it all started for me.
Nice, nice. And you play multiple instruments. What are the ones you play right now?
Yes. So I play keys, guitar, bass, drums, and then I've done, you know, auxiliary percussion. I played bongos and did backup vocals in a friend of mine's band. So kind of those are the core for me. When I play live, it's mostly me singing with a guitar, but I can play all those, you know, well enough to get the job done.
Nice, nice. Oh, I know. Like it. I was at a folk concert a few months ago as a North Carolina band called Mandolin Orange, and yes, I'm always amazed. Like especially when you see live music when they can just like jump back and forth between like the banjo and the guitar and like they're playing multiple ones and going back and forth. I'm just like, I'm always amazed at that kind of level of performance, you know?
Yeah, I'm always impressed too. I'm not expert level on those instruments, but
sure.
You know, I can play them well enough to like, you know, record or just kind of fill in on a live set or something like that.
Sure, sure, absolutely. Well, that's great. And so I watched a video profile of you recently, and this is on James's Instagram, by the way, if you want to check it out. But you were talking there about how your music specifically helped you tremendously when you were diagnosed with SMA. So can you talk about that and just how your diagnosis and your music intersected? And also when you were diagnosed too?
Sure, yeah. So I was diagnosed right before, like a month before I turned 15. So, you know, I was in high school and I kind of was aware that like the kids who were kind of the more social and, you know, in that crew that everyone knew, those are the kids that were like the athletes or, you know, those types of folks. And so at that time, I actually could sort of play sports, not well, but it just was like, you know, it was a huge blow to me. I didn't really understand what the diagnosis meant. But as time went on and I got older and I grew, you know, physically grew, the SMA became, you know, harder to deal with. And so I started to isolate myself because in my mind, I thought that, you know, I wasn't an athlete. And so people wouldn't, you know, want to socialize or hang out with me because, you know, I didn't have those like physical attributes. And I thought kind of that's what made or broke your social status. And I just isolated myself and kind of, you know, had a hard time as, you know, time progressed especially after high school when SMA started to affect me more going into college. And so I was just very, very, you know, I just stayed to myself. I was very alone. And, you know, I started to listen to some songs that really had great messages about, you know, being yourself, being authentic, and not really caring about what other people might think and just being true to yourself. And I just started really, really latching on to music even harder because I was listening to songs that kind of had that message. And that kind of really saved me, to be honest. You know, it gave me an identity, and it just made me feel really, really good. And I was like, you know what, I can go out here in this world and be me, and things will be fine. And I started listening to those messages, I became, you know, more in love with music and started to play more instruments and started to kind of craft my own songs. And that was kind of a really big positive turning point in my life.
Right. And so you hadn't really done much like songwriting of your own prior to that point?
I had done a little bit, not as much as, you know, from that point on, but I'd probably written a few songs. I'd written a few songs when I was younger, just kind of toying around with it. Just probably, you know, I'd say five or less. But yeah, right around that time, I started to kind of break out the old the pen and notebook and really started to just kind of get into it. And I started jotting down a lot of, you know, thoughts and feelings and putting, you know, melodies to them and all that good stuff.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, hearing you talk about, you know, you're diagnosed right when you were at 15, which is an awkward enough age as it is, and, you know, dealing with just coming of age stuff and all that. And, you know, it's always fascinating talking with, like, people like you with type 3 or type 4, because, you know, I'm type 2, so SMA has always been there in my life, you know? Like, I was diagnosed at 18 months, and I've never known anything else. So, you know, you mentioned a little bit about, like, the physical challenges, but especially once you started to have that realization that you could still do things with it and your music helped you a lot, what was that process like of just adapting to life with a disability?
In terms of just, do you mean, you know, actually just like learning the instruments and playing them, or do you mean more of like on the, or like the more like the crafting the songs, like,
Sure. So kind of on both, like both on the music side and then also just like adjusting to, like you said, the physical aspects and like getting through, you know, just the, you know, life as a whole, like what things were kind of changing post your diagnosis.
Gotcha. Yeah. So when I started, like right around probably my senior year of high school, I hit a turning point where I had like a growth spurt, you know, probably the summer or two prior to that. And so I grew, you know, definitely quite a few inches.
Sure.
And that really started to affect me. I could tell. And so I started to fall a lot more. Stairs became more difficult. I could go up and down stairs, but I noticed, you know, around like 17, it was harder to do. And so I tried to hide it because no one really knew that I had SMA, you know, except my family and a few close friends. And I think even because I didn't really understand what it meant, my close friends certainly didn't understand what it meant. And so I tried to hide it as much as I could. And so for me, that meant like in classes, our high school was two stories, so I would leave class early, let my teachers know so I could, you know, get up the stairs before everyone else did.
Sure.
And we also have like this really long ramp that connected the two levels, so I would either go up the stairs or go up the ramp, and that was like very much out of the way. And so I would do that. I would, you know, if someone saw me go up a stair, I'd kind of like try to get like kind of like a little running like jump start and just kind of like push off that way. And so to try to make it less noticeable. So I was doing things like that. With the music, once I got to college, my college was it's built on a hill. And so that really, really took a tremendous physical toll on me. And so, you know, I started to like, I actually took a semester off during college just because it just kind of shocked my body and I just didn't really know what to do. But with that, you know, I would kind of, you know, leave class early there too. I would miss class if it was kind of like out of the way and the weather wasn't good. When I started to play instruments more, that happened in college. And so I really got into drums at that point. And I had joined a band and they were kind of like a jam band, like jazz fusion. So we were doing improv and we'd play for like 3 or 4 hours straight, you know, and that was like I could go for probably a little bit. I could go for like, you know, an hour or two. And then I would start to really, really, like, my arms would just start dying on me.
Right.
So I would come up with little tricks where I would like rest my arm on my knee or rest my arm on one of the floor toms so I could just keep hitting the snare. And I wouldn't be doing as many like fills and stuff, but I could still, you know, keep the time, keep it going with the bass drum and the snare. I would position the drums where like there might be some sort of thing I could rest my arm on. So like I would just do that. And then luckily, you know, at college, you know, all my friends are, they're partying, they're having drinks and stuff. And so there was always someone in the crowd who was like, oh, hey, man, I'm a drummer. Do you mind if I jump in? And if my arms are really tired, like, yeah, jump in. You know, I wouldn't say, hey, I need a rest, but the underlying truth was I needed a rest. So I'd go off, socialize, but all right, hey, man, get my sticks back and come back and do that. So it was just like, you know, a lot of tricks like that in terms of like drums were definitely the hardest part. When I started playing guitar, the same thing. I would just kind of position the guitar in a way where I could, you know, take a break or just like rest it where I wasn't really using the muscles, you know, to strum the strings and all that stuff. I would, you know, I was playing really long sets on guitar as well. So I would, you know, take breaks and stuff. So it was just like, I kind of knew my body and I just was like, all right, if I don't do this, I'm not going to finish this set. So, you know, let me be proactive about it. So it's just like, as I went along the way, I just kind of learned things. In terms of song crafting, I mean, it really influenced that side of things because I was writing from the perspective of a person with a disability. And, you know, as it started to affect me more physically and I learned more about it and I kind of learned, you know, what the future might look like with SMA, that really influenced, you know, my thought process. And it was a story I started to write of like just of overcoming things, you know, or just kind of being happy with what you have. And in the message of like, hey, life's hard for everyone. Everyone has their own challenge. And you can still thrive with those challenges. So that became like a message that I would, you know, touch on in my songwriting. And so it influenced things from that angle as well.
Absolutely. Well, and on that note too of like, you know, going from a point of, like you said, trying to hide your disability to learning more about it and kind of embracing it. I know you, especially lately, you've gotten much more involved with like the SMA community and in just disability advocacy. Was there kind of a turning point there, or did you just kind of like, how did that go about, like in terms of getting more active in that community?
Yeah. So, you know, you touched on, you know, me trying to hide it for a long time. And then it was like, it's really funny because some people will be like, oh, you have an invisible illness or whatever. And I'm like, no, it's not invisible. Cause if I take a step or whatever, you'll see that it's clearly visible, you know, but if I'm just standing there, a lot of people don't know that I have SMA. And even I had a buddy of mine that I've known for a really, really long time that I grew up with, and he didn't know I had it. And he just found out like a couple of weeks ago, and he was shocked. I had a friend in college like last year, and the same thing was like, I didn't know that you had this, you know. And he's seen me walk around on campus and stuff in the past. So the turning point came for me because a lot of my friends didn't know that I had it. But then they were like, oh, you have a disability. And so I was kind of like a link between, you know, I was a link to the disabled community for a lot of folks because, you know, sadly, a lot of people don't have experience with, you know, with close experience with disability. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my friends were athletes and stuff, and they had probably not really encountered that. Or some of them may have not encountered that. And so they were like, wow, this guy that I know really, really well, is like a really good friend of mine who I thought from the outset was like an athlete, you know, has this, you know, pretty serious disability. So I was kind of like a bridge, you know? And so I started to kind of like educate people. And then there was a time where I was playing a show. It happened actually, it happened twice, but one of the times I'd actually fallen on stage, as like a singer in a band. And, you know, I was actually in front of a really large crowd once, and I tripped and I fell backwards and I fell down, and the crowd just kind of like stopped and stared, and they were just in shock.
Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, and, I got up, I think one of my, you know, my bass player helped me up, my bandmates, and I kind of like, I just saw that they were all staring at me. And so I was like, hey, have this disability. It's called spinal muscular atrophy type 3. You know, really quick summary of it. Here's what you can do. Here's where you can donate. And then I cracked the joke about it because everyone was drunk in the crowd.
Right.
It was a rock show. But people really, like, resonated with it. And I got this really big applause. And I was like, whoa, this is pretty powerful. This is what I can do. Instead of trying to, like, not talk about it and hide it, I can actually just raise awareness for, you know, this disability and try to raise funds for a cure and educate people. And that was kind of the turning point. Like, I realized I was up on stage with a microphone in my hand anyway. I have SMA. I'm very comfortable with the mic in my hand for whatever reason. So I can do some good with this. And so that was actually the turning point for me. And pretty much from that moment forward, I was like, man, I've found my calling. Like, I'm not going to hide this. Like, I'm going to go super hard on this. I'm going to double down and just go heavy into the advocacy for SMA and, you know, just disabilities in general.
Man, that's really cool. That's like when I asked you if there's a turning point, that's like an awesome story that you really did have, like, that full on stage moment, everything. That's great.
Yeah, it was an eye opener for me as well. But I was like, this is it. I know what's up.
So. Right. That's great. Well, and on that note too, of like in terms of overcoming stigmas and all of that, you've talked too about how you had to overcome stigmas about dating and disability. So can you talk about that and maybe like what helped boost your confidence in that area?
Yeah, man, definitely. A lot of folks in just the disabled community in general, dating is a huge topic. No one talks about it. I know in the SMA community, when I went to the conference, like, I had so many conversations about dating. No one, you know, no one's talking about it, but all the people with SMA are talking about
right,
it. You know?
Right.
And so I've been really, really, you know, I've been really, really lucky. I've actually dated a ton, and I always am careful because I don't want it to sound arrogant, but I know that people with disabilities often struggle with this a lot. But like, I've had zero issues with dating. I've dated a ton. For me, it was just, I just owned it, you know. It was really when I started being very open and about it, like, that's when everything changed for me, including dating. Like, when I was in college, you know, I was still kind of trying to hide it. I wasn't on campus much. I wasn't being social. I was going home on the weekends to see my family. And so I just wasn't there. And so when I get back to campus, I had a buddy. He'd be like, yo, man, like, what are you doing? He was like, there are girls out here that are like asking about you, and like your boys are trying to party. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? I'm shocked by that. And so I started sticking around, and I just started like talking about it more. And like, the whole thing changed for me. Like, girls were like, I don't care at all about that. Like, let's go have fun. I'd go to parties, like, girls would come up and like talk to me, whatever, you know, like, it was not an issue. And I also realized, like, the feedback I got about that was that they appreciated my honesty, and then they also appreciated the vulnerability, you know, to be able to talk about such a serious issue. And so they were like, wow, this dude is, you know, pretty open in that way, which I also thought was funny because I'm pretty closed off in a lot of ways. But with that, you know, it was important for me to talk about it. And so that, it was just like being open, being honest. And then also too, I learned along the way that a lot of people want to help you, you know? So when I was telling girls about it, like, they were like, I don't care. Like, how can I help? I want to help you in whatever way. I've tripped and fallen in front of girls countless times, and that's never, ever stopped me from dating or whatever, you know? So, I want that message to be heard by, you know, my brothers and sisters in the disability community, because I know tons of people that are married and have great relationships, or they're dating casually and they date a lot, you know. It's definitely doable. I think it's just about being yourself and just being open about it, and just having confidence is a huge, huge thing, no matter what it is. So many people struggle with confidence, you know, outside of having a disability. I know actresses and models and all these people who people would think they have, it's so easy when it comes to dating. They struggle with dating just as much as any of us do, and they lack confidence, you know. So get your confidence right, and just go out there and be yourself, and don't be afraid to ask for help. And that's what I've done, and it's worked for me.
No, man, that's a great point. And I mean, just to echo that in terms of the asking for help is like, it's something I've talked about and written about plenty of times before, but it's like, you know, as someone with a more severe case, it's like, I entered college when my arm strength was rapidly declining and I had to rely on like other people to help me, like essentially help feed me and everything. And it's like, I was all nervous about it at first, but I found, especially on a college campus, like people were more than willing to go out of their way to help me. And like, I mean, friends, girls, whatever, you know, it was just like, you got it. When you have that confidence, it makes it so much easier. Yeah.
Exactly. Then no one makes it in this world alone. And if they tell you that they did, they're lying.
Yeah.
So
yep.
We all need help in some way. Like, you know, like I said, if people don't see me, like I'll be in the grocery store and I can't lift like a carton of milk or something. You know, I've asked people for help with lifting things and I'm like, you know, people, like I said, people think I'm like an athlete when they just first look at me and they'll be like, what's this dude asking this like for helping with their milk? You know? But I've asked men, women, you know, people who are shorter than me, who are much smaller than me, you know, like you have to do it. And I become comfortable doing that because it's just a part of life. Like we all need help along the way in some way, shape or form.
Absolutely. No, thanks for saying that. And it's it's a great point. Well, and shifting gears just a little, you were talking a little bit about as well, but like in terms of representation and like, I think we are seeing more musicians and actors and comedians with disabilities enter the entertainment industry. So as an artist with a disability yourself, why do you think this kind of representation is important?
I think it's important because a lot of times what we see on TV or hear on the radio or whatever media, the media that we consume, it often influences our perceptions of the world. And, you know, up until, like you said, there's a shift and there are more actors, actresses, models, musicians with disabilities, you know, entering the space now, and the conversation is happening, but we're still really, really behind, I think, from where we need to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, traditionally, people with disabilities are portrayed in a very poor light. They're often portrayed as, like, a fool, someone who, you know, people are laughing at this person, and they're the butt of the joke, and they don't understand that they're the butt of the joke. Often the disability is something to be overcome, and it's like, I got to triumph and rise above my disability. And so the portrayals are very, very negative. And so once we start showing people as they are, you know, we are just like people without disabilities. It might come as a surprise to many folks, but newsflash, we're the same feelings, do the same things, have the same wants, have the same needs. And so I think once we start, you know, actually showing the real portrayals, then people will be like, oh, so okay, I get it. Like, there's no difference here. Because we're definitely portrayed as very, very different. And like I said, I've encountered lots of people who don't have a close relationship to disability. And so we need to do that. And I think media has a very powerful role in having that influence. And so I think that's why it's you know, hugely, hugely necessary.
No, absolutely. Well, and I know we haven't really touched on this yet. We've been mainly talking about your music, but you act as well. Can you talk about that and how you got into that area?
Yeah, so I actually started acting when I was younger, at, like around the age of like 8 or 9, and I did that for a few years. I was actually on a series on BET for like it got canceled after one season.
Okay.
I was on a commercial. I had done some other projects like that, and I really, really liked it. But you know, as a kid, I didn't know really what I was, you know, I just showed up and they were like, oh, do this. You know, I didn't really kind of like understand the art form, I guess, behind it, you know, but
sure.
I really, really liked it. And then, you know, I just kind of, things changed and I just kind of, you know, that fell by the wayside. But then when I was, as I was playing music, I started to like, we got offered, my band got offered a spot to do a commercial for Hawaii Five-O, the new version that came out some years ago.
Nice.
And we got offered to do a promo in it, and we did it. And I had like a blast. It was a, you know, it didn't take long to film, But I was like, oh yeah, this is what it feels like to, you know, to act again. I really loved it. And so from there, I was like, oh, I think I want to start doing, you know, some more acting and stuff. And kind of all my life through the music and just like people talking, I like to crack jokes. I like to make humor out of everything. And so all my friends are like, they find me, you know, they're like, dude, you're funny. Like, you know, this is pretty entertaining. And they're always like, you should be on TV or you should do something like that, you know? And so I was kind of always fed that, like, oh, you should try acting. And so once this commercial happened, I was like, oh, I'm gonna jump back into this. And so I started doing it. I started doing stuff like on my own, like submitting to projects, you know, without an agent. There was a couple of like platforms that allow you to do that. And so I'd gotten a couple of like, you know, a couple of roles, short films, some like, you know, things of that nature. And then I really, really loved it. I was living on the East Coast when I started doing this. And so I was like traveling back and forth from like the D.C. area to New York a lot, because that's where all the castings and stuff were. So just jumping on a bus, doing all that stuff. And then when I moved out to California, I moved to San Diego originally. I had picked up an agent before I moved. That was like a kind of like a family friend, and they weren't doing like a lot of castings in like LA or anything. And so when I moved out to California, I was just still kind of doing the DIY things, submitting them on my own, going back and forth to LA. And then the summer of 2018, I done this acting project where I met some other actors with disabilities and met a really, really great friend and sort of a mentor. Her name's Eileen, and she's phenomenal. She's doing, she's on TV a lot now, which is a really, really, really happy and proud of her. But she actually introduced me to an agent that reps a lot of people with disabilities. And so, I went with them and started, you know, was still submitting on my own, but started doing more projects and stuff, did a few things, and yeah, it's going great. So that's kind of where things stand. I have another management company that I'm starting to work with too. So yeah, it's been really good. But they both the agency and the management company are focused predominantly on people with disabilities, or specifically on people with disabilities. And so, you know, they're submitting to like all these really cool gigs, and a lot of good stuff's happening. It's a great time to have the conversation. So I'm really, really enjoying myself, and looking forward to the road ahead. It's a hard and long road. You hear no every single day, but I can deal with the no's and stuff, and I really, really like it. So,
man, I bet. Well, and I'm sure, you know, with a career like yours, it changes day to day. But if you could sum up like what a typical day looks like for you, what is that? Like, whether like if it's, you know, rehearsing or you got a show or what, like what's kind of a more or less typical day for you?
Yeah, so I actually have a right now I have a full-time day job too, so
gotcha.
I don't have much time at all. But the typical thing, you know, is go to work, you know, on breaks and stuff, I'm on my phone answering emails to you know, like from the agents and all that stuff about castings and auditions. So, you know, when I can, like some of the auditions will happen on the weekends, so I'll go and do those, or in the evenings after work, I'll do that. So pretty much when I come home, it's all entertainment related stuff. I devote a lot of hours to that at night doing that. I am also currently recording some new songs. So I'm currently like rehearsing and going to the studio and knocking that stuff out. But yeah, the typical day is it's like rehearsing for auditions, going out to auditions. This week I actually have a shoot that I'm going to be on. So this week I'll be, you know, doing that, like prepping for that fitting tomorrow. And then the shoot is the latter half of the week for a few days. So yeah, you're just always in the mode of like trying to, you know, partition everything. But I'm always in the mode of like, you know, entertainment stuff, acting, whatever it is, rehearsing, and then the music stuff. So I don't have a lot of free time. I'm always tired, but it's a good way to be. It's a good way to be for now, you know. So
sure. Oh yeah, it's a lot to. I mean, that's the kind of sacrifice when you want to do or for like when you get to that for a career, it's always a ton to manage. Well, and on that note, dude, my last question is just, especially on that note of like maintaining energy levels and all that, do you have any advice for artists with disabilities, whether it's about entering the industry or, you know, maintaining your energy, anything like that you want to give advice to?
Yeah, so I would say, look for, it doesn't have to be an agency that specifically represents people with disabilities, but, you know, if you can find one of those, do that. My agency is KMR Talent. They have a division called KMR Diversity, so, you know, reach out to them, and, you know, if that's something that you're interested in doing. I would say get like a good mentor. There are people who have been doing this. Like I mentioned, my friend Eileen, she's been doing this for you know, some time. Get mentors that are doing what you want to do, whether they have a disability or not. You know, learn the craft. Take your acting classes. If you're doing music, take your vocal lessons. Take your guitar lessons. Like rehearse, because unfortunately, I hate to say it, but like I said, we've been portrayed. People with disabilities have been portrayed so negatively in the media that, like, you know, it's and a lot of times they don't want to let us in the door or let us on the set for whatever project, so they're looking for any reason to give us the boot. So make sure your skills are up to standard, make sure you're sharp and you know your stuff, and you come in there and you can wow them, because they're already probably some of those folks are probably already, you know, hoping that, you know, we mess up or thinking that we're not going to do a great job. So be prepared to do a great job. You know, get a mentor, and just see what other people have done. In terms of like, once you're just doing it, you know, take your breaks, make sure you rest. That's a huge thing for me that I don't do enough. Rest is key. You know, do whatever exercises you can. I know in the SMA community, you know, there are, you know, only certain things that we can do. So just, you know, do what you can, you know, don't burn yourself out. But I believe that, you know, physical therapy is great. Do physical therapy, whatever exercises you can do. You know, I try to stay on top of that and eat healthy. You know, that's a huge part of it for me, has been diet, and just like resting has been great and kind of allowed me to, you know, get to where I am at least now and not be completely burned out. So, those are the things I do. You know, and ask for help, ask for support, ask for the tips. You know, the entertainment industry is really, really hard, but there are people who've had success and done the things that you want to do, and learn from them. And especially if they have a disability, you can kind of see the route they took to get where they are. And it's a very supportive community. They're willing to help. And so, do all those things, and don't get discouraged. You're going to hear no a lot. The roles in projects for people with disabilities, I feel like they don't come along often. So it is very competitive. So, you know, don't get discouraged. It's just kind of the nature of the beast right now. I don't think it will always be that way, but just keep your head up. If it's something that you really, really want to do and you believe passionately in it, don't let anyone discourage you. Don't let the industry discourage you. Don't let your friends and family discourage you. Stick with it and do it. I've been told no a million times, or that I should do something else. And I don't listen to that, you know, and I'm having a blast. So,
man, that's great. No, thank you for sharing your story, and it's great advice out there. So that's awesome, man.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. It means a lot, and great to chat with you. I love what you're doing. You know, I'm always following you on IG and all your writing and all the cool things that you're doing in the community. So thank you very much for doing that, because it's we all need to see and hear those things.
Oh man, I appreciate it. Well, and on that note too, where can listeners find you?
Sure. So Spotify, it's just James Ian. I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, all that good stuff. The album is called The Labor of Love. That's the current one. I'm releasing some new songs next year. So I have one called Make a Stand that I think I'll probably be releasing for Black History Month in February. So that'll be out. I'm currently recording another one that's almost finished. So new stuff will be, so I'll be out next year. You can find it all on that stuff. And then just for the, if you do Instagram and Twitter, I actually don't post a lot, but it's both of my handles. There are James Ian Music for that stuff. So yeah, if I put up stuff, you'll probably see it there, and you can connect with me, friend me on Facebook at James Ian. I love just connecting with folks and gaining new friends and new perspectives. So
that's awesome, man. Well, definitely, to our listeners out there, definitely check out James' music. I was listening to the album this morning. It's I highly recommend. So
thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you.
Oh man, absolutely. Well, and just as a note, this is actually our last interview of the year because we'll have one more podcast. It'll be a roundtable with me and Michael. But yeah, so James, you are the last big one-on-one interview of 2019 before. And we will, of course, continue the podcast in the new year. So I just want to give a shout out to all listeners out there. Your support means a ton. So wherever you listen, you know, keep listening, keep telling your friends and families about the podcast. Any support is greatly appreciated. And you can also connect with me and others at SMA News Today directly on our forums. We will be around there. And yeah, again, thank you for listening. And we will be back in a couple weeks for the last roundtable discussion of the year. So, James, thank you again. And to our listeners out there, I will see you next time. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Take care.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays to everyone.
Absolutely.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcasts and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. I'm Michael Morale, Senior Director of Multichannel Content for SMA News Today.